In August of 1954, Bryant retired from active working. At least that was supposed to be the idea. Actually, both of us have found more to do in retirement than ever before. We sold our Detroit home and bought a new car. We were fed up with snow and ice, so we headed south for the lands of sunshine with Old Mexico as our eventual objective. We were in no hurry. We were relaxing, having fun. We had no particular program in mind other than going places and seeing things. If saucers came our way, fine. If not, fine again. We did, however, carry quite a saucer arsenal. But it was not deliberately or aggressively premeditated. We had not even thought of the possibility of using our saucer material in a foreign country. The material had simply become important to us, and we wanted to study and re-evaluate it ourselves. We had quite a time trying to decide what to take along and what to leave behind, in other words, what was essential. We finally had to en meeny miny mo some of the decisions or flip coins to yes or no some material. If hunting and fishing had been our passion, we suppose the car would have been loaded with guns, rods and reels. As a matter of fact, it was weighed down to the waterline with saucer books, tape recordings of saucer lectures, a tape recorder, photographic equipment and the like. We thus set sail in high spirits for parts unknown. We steered for the little town of Princeton, Illinois, which was Bryant's old hometown. He was born there. We said hello to a few friends, deposited some excess baggage at the old homestead and then set sail for Dallas, Texas, where we had some kinfolk. "Listen," said Helen as we sped along the open road. "I've been doing some thinking about this saucer business. On our trip, we will probably meet a number of people and we may start discussing saucers. We need a system."
"A system?" I replied.
"What kind of a system?" She answered, "Just a good system to feel out people to see if they are interested in the subject before we attempt to talk about it. You know, if you open up with the wrong people, they just think you're insane, balmy, pixelated and candidates for the little men in the white coats." "You mean you would like a secret saucer password or a secret hand grip? How about wearing saucer buttons?"
"Don't be ridiculous. We might use this system. Say we are talking to people whom we have just met and at an appropriate lull in the conversation, I say, or you say, 'What do you think about these reports we hear on flying saucers?' Then we sit back and watch for the reaction."
"Fine idea," I agreed. "Let's give it a try. Might be interesting, but for heaven's sake, let's not get involved with saucers. We are on vacation." We did not have long to wait to give this system a tryout. We were dining at the Dallas Athletic Club with our kinfolk. Conversation was local, terribly local, and it gradually petered out. There came a lull just made to order. Helen jumped in pronto with both feet. "What do you think about these reports we hear on flying saucers?" she asked perfectly innocently, perfectly casually. Then came the deluge. "Of all the fools. What do they take us for? Trying to make money out of that. Etc., etc." It worked. It worked then, and it worked later. It was a priceless system. We adopted it as standard practice. We hoped they had it in Columbus time. It could save an awful lot of wear and tear on the nervous system of progressive-minded people. It worked both ways. In this case, it brought out a negative interest, but it proved just as good in bringing out a positive interest. We remember one occasion later in a beautiful Mexican restaurant with a gorgeous patio. We worked the system in poor Spanish. Like magic, in a few moments we were surrounded with travelers and natives and waiters, all enthusiastically telling us of their own saucer experiences and all eager to learn more. But to return to the Dallas Athletic Club. After the deluge, we shut up like clams. The party ended, and our kinfolk moved toward the elevators. There they ran into a group of trusted friends. After the usual greetings and introductions, one of our party remarked, "We have been discussing the ridiculous subject of flying saucers. Isn't it just, how exciting?" replied one of the trusted friends. "Wish we could have sat in on the conversation. We saw one ourselves only a few weeks ago." The expression on certain faces was worth remembering.
And that is the way we found it everywhere on our trip, people who knew, and people who did not know, the one group gradually educating the other group to new happenings in our skies, and gradually, very gradually, to the discernment of the great cosmic implications, crossing the border. Late in October of 1954 we found ourselves crossing the border at Laredo, Texas, into Old Mexico and speeding along the road of adventure toward Mexico City some 770 miles ahead of us. We had a 6 months tourist permit and a big round sticker on our windshield to prove it. Mexican Route Number 85. The Laredo Road. Most gringo tourists call it that. Incidentally, the word gringo is really something, if you understand it. Originally it was a word of disrespect meaning unwanted foreigner, something like our expression damned Yankee in our Southland. We often applied it humorously to ourselves and found that this tickled our Mexican friends no end. They are just about the most courteous and polite people on earth and would never think of using such an offensive word themselves. But whenever we referred to ourselves as gringos, they usually joined heartily in the laughter that followed. It often broke the ice of the impeccable familiarity with which they often first meet visitors. But, where were we? The Laredo Road. We did not dash madly down that road seeing only the pavement, the curve signs, and the speedometer, as most North Americans do. Far from it. We just loafed along, and we found the scenery beautiful, magnificent in fact. Incidentally, when you cross the border never refer to yourself as an American. You are a North American because the people south of the border also belong to the three Americas. Bryant had lived many places in Europe and had traveled extensively, but he maintains that this drive was one of the most beautiful mountain drives he has even seen. No tourist guidebook or travelogue has ever done it justice. The sunshine, the profusion of color, the white clouds in the blue sky and best of all the green mountains nearby backed up by endless towering peaks in the distance was something to see and remember. We were not even thinking of saucers. We had left them far behind back in the States. We were on a long vacation from everything, including saucers. We were conscious only of the grand sunshine, the beauty of our surroundings and the fun of exploring a new country. As we drove through the little town of Valls, little did we realize, well, later we will tell you about that experience. After 4 days of loafing and endless colored picture shooting, the green Indians suddenly appeared ahead of us. These are the imposing bronze statues, one on either side of Highway Number 85, that silently tell the visitor that he has finally arrived at Mexico, D.F. We were just as surprised as many visitors, to learn that the name Mexico is applied to the capital city which is located in the Distrito Federal as well as to the country itself. One can thus go to Mexico when already in Mexico, disregarding all the warnings previously given us about the dire necessity of turning the wheel over to experienced Mexican drivers at the gates. We plunged forward into Mexican traffic, like the proverbial fools who go where angels don't. If we were to tell you about Mexican traffic, you wouldn't believe it anyway, so why try? There is only one way to find out about the glorietas and the torps and how traffic moves in Mexico, D.F., and that is to experience it yourself. How the Mexicans expect any gringo to find his way about with half the streets named Transito is beyond us. But we finally made it and soon found a nice apartment on a street named for the famous British scientist Isaac Newton, only they pronounced it Ek. There we were all set for a wonderful rest and vacation in fabulous Mexico City relaxation. Wonderful word, grand idea, relaxation. Transito or direction of traffic signs are often more prominent than street names. Chapter 7. Saucers south of the border. Few weeks of loafing and bliss followed, but not for long, for Helen came upon a Mexican newspaper that printed an article on, well, you have probably guessed it, on platillos voladores, the Spanish equivalent of flying saucers. Yes, alas, the Mexicans also have a name for it, those blessed flying things down here, I shouted. What do they do, follow us around. Why don't they leave us alone? We're on a vacation, aren't we? Looks mighty interesting, remarked Helen, mighty interesting. The article has some illustrations of sources. Wish I could read Spanish better. Wonder who wrote it. Ah, here it is. Senor GB, a Senor GB wrote it. About that time our doorbell rang, and Helen rushed to the balcony to see who it might be. It was Joey, a fine young Mexican lad, one of our fast-growing circle of priceless friends in this amazing city. He spoke both Spanish and English and was thus a great help to us. Helen threw the front door keys down to Joey from the balcony, a sort of interesting Spanish-American custom that saves a four-story elevator trip. Joey, said Helen as he came in, did you ever hear of flying saucers? Joey looked blank. Platillos voladores, persisted Helen in her best Spanish, which incidentally always threw our most dignified Mexican friends into hysterics. Joey still looked blank. Helen then waved the newspaper at him and asked him to translate the article by Senor GB on Platillos voladores. Joey politely did the translating, but to him it obviously was nothing but inconsequential science fiction. Why any North American bothered about such stuff was evidently beyond him. Then it happened, one of those innocent little things, based on sudden impulse. I could stop her. Helen was at our telephone trying in a horrible mixture of Spanish and English to contact an unknown Mexican by the name of Senor GB. Totally unaware of what portentous things lay ahead, I was idly listening in, rather amused and enjoying the language difficulties. The voice on the other end of the line never heard of Mr. GB. Well, who wrote the article in your paper? Somebody must have written it. It is signed by Senor GB. Helen was getting a little out of patience. The voice on the other end suddenly became alive and remembered the article. It was the editor himself who wrote it. But his name was not GB. Those were just his initials, GB. Then may I speak to Senor GB? Persisted Helen. My friends, that did it. That innocent appearing little telephone call. We did not know it then, but it was destined to change the whole course of human events for us. Gone was our vacation. Gone were our loafing and our resting. It started a chain reaction of fantastic events that were about to catch us up in a giddy whirl of Mexican flying saucer activities that would make our Detroit experiences look like slow motion. It seemed only minutes to us before Senor GB himself was at our apartment discussing Platillos Voladores in an excited mixture of two languages. I often wondered how he got there so fast without teleportation. He was deadly serious about the saucer subject, which really did amaze our friend Joey. Senor GB is a grand soul, and we even to Ali became closely associated with him in many a flying saucer adventure in Mexico. We also enjoyed knowing his wonderful family. Helen presented him with enough saucer material to keep his newspaper busy for weeks to come, and when he discovered that we had tape recordings of saucer lectures by Adamski, Williamson and others, he insisted that there were hundreds of people in Mexico who would want to hear them. His predictions turned out to be an understatement, as rapidly unfolding events were soon to indicate. Senor GB's weekly articles on saucers created considerable interest in Mexico City, and other newspapers began writing on the subject. Before we left the country, 6 months later, practically all the metropolitan dailies were carrying saucer articles, and since our departure a letter from our little friend Joey tells us that a new popular song Mambo is all the rage there entitled The Martians Are Coming. When we first arrived in the capital we could not find a single saucer book in Spanish, and the Leslie Adamski book in English was difficult to obtain. Gradually, however, this situation changed. A Spanish edition of this book was brought out during our stay, and many books on saucers in English began to appear in the bookstores. The strange unwritten censorship or apathy that we felt in the States was not nearly as much in evidence south of the border. In fact, in South America, during November of 1954 the Brazilian Air Force held a veritable saucer convention with discussions, photographs and reports well publicized. But let us tell you what happened in our apartment in Mexico, D. F. It gradually became an unofficial headquarters for saucer interest in the capital. We first played tapes of saucer lectures and then were requested to give lectures ourselves. These lectures were given in English but were always interpreted for the benefit of those in the audience who understood only Spanish. Our library of saucer books were avidly sought after by many people who were actually hungry to learn more about this great subject, and we had a waiting list of those desiring books. Our acquaintance grew by leaps and bounds. We could hardly keep up with the social engagements and commitments that developed from this interest in spacecraft and space beings. Talk about cafe society in the Mexican capital. It was not an Etwo 3 compared to the new and exciting flying saucer social season that was gaining momentum all the time. It was nothing for us to have a saucer meeting with 20 or 30 guests in our apartment during the day, and then be invited to a charming Mexican residence for an evening of discussion on the same subject. Many people were sincerely interested in these objects visiting our skies. May we say that the people we thus met were wonderful. There was a large Mexican contingent which included such people as doctors, lawyers, newspapermen, engineers, scientists, artists, authors and military men, yes, even a general. We feel we must also mention our good friend Colonel B of the Mexican Air Force, who was the Mexican authority on flying saucer phenomena. Keen, witty, agreeable, ever alert for new information, he was a most welcome visitor. We were able to trade saucer information with him on numerous occasions, for we were still in direct correspondence with many leading sorcerers. When Colonel B could not come himself, he often sent a representative. Please note that these officers were not sneering at flying saucers, nor were they muzzled. Far from it, they were fully cognizant of the existence of spaceships and were leaving no stone unturned to learn all they could about them. Many fine, highly educated and distinguished people came to our saucer meetings or invited us to contribute to their own meetings. Then there was a sizable English-speaking contingent also, and a group of North American students, mostly from Mexico City College, where many classes are held in English. Mexico is sort of a crossroads leading to both North and South America. It was thus a fascinating and cosmopolitan activity, this saucer business south of the border. The unknown sorcerers. Please do not think for one moment that the contributions were all from our side. Far from it. We met an amazing number of conservative and established people who had experienced remarkable saucer sightings. Men, women and young people started coming to us from all walks of life to tell us of their sightings. In fact, one young Mexican arrived on a bicycle at 6 o'clock one morning at our apartment to tell us about his particular sighting. Please note that these sorcerers could only be found when some sympathetic group of individuals got together and began to give a little publicity to the sorcerers on something besides a scornful basis. We soon learned from actual experience that such groups became veritable magnets and began to attract the sorcerers that the world as a whole knows nothing about. We coined the name for these unknown people with saucer experiences. We call them the unknown sorcerers. We found them everywhere we went. Natural shyness, modesty or fear of ridicule or worse, often hold them back from telling their stories. But once they know that someone believes in sources and can be trusted, they will tell freely of their experiences. We believe this is a point well worth noting by sincere students of this subject. If we ourselves were able to find these unknown sorcerers wherever we went, what about the number that must be all around the world? It seems to us a shame that the world does not have a great unprejudiced international clearinghouse for this type of information, which could act as a magnet for international information on sightings and contacts. We must emphasize again and again the necessity for a sympathetic approach if any real good is to result. Possibly such a bureau could be established within the framework of the United Nations. The Flying Tortilla. As previously stated, it is not our purpose to catalogue saucer sightings in this book, especially those which have not been carefully verified. However, there is one sighting we learned about in Mexico which took place while we were there, and for a good reason we would like to mention it. It was reported as occurring near the town of Chilpancingo, about 180 miles south of Mexico City on the road to Acapulco. The report stated that a group of primitive Mexican Indians, living some kilometers from town, had seen a spaceship land and had watched several persons get out of it and gather up samples of vegetation and soil. Incidentally, such gathering of vegetation and soil by spacemen is nothing new in the accounts of sightings, both ancient and modern, as many students of this subject will realize. We wanted to investigate this particular report very much, and so did some of our Mexican friends, but with the pressure of other AC activities, we never got around to it. What we want to especially mention is that the Indians call the saucer a flying tortilla. Well, anyone who understands the Mexican tortilla, which is like a flat cornmeal pancake often baked head flat with the hands and the part it plays as the staff of life to the humble people of that great land, will appreciate the name flying tortilla. Of all the grassroot names to apply to a spacecraft, we think it takes the prize. We never have liked the name flying saucer anyway. Maybe we should seriously consider the term flying tortilla. Skeptics and fanatics. Possibly we had given the false impression that all of Mexico was interested in saucers. This was not the case, for we did run into our share of skeptics. We lived through some tough sessions as well as some friendly ones. We particularly recall one occasion when a group of astronomy students invaded our apartment accompanied by their teacher. They came primed for battle and evidently hoped they had enough book learning so that they would be able to discount the whole phenomena. They brought their textbooks along to prove such things simply could not be. Fortunately, we had one staunch ally present, our interpreter. As the discussion got underway, it began to gather momentum. If we had understood more Spanish, we could have done battle more effectively. As it was, about the only Spanish words we could catch were absurd, impossible, absurd, impossible, repeated so often they became monotonous. If you want to have fun sometime, just try arguing about flying saucers in a foreign country through an interpreter. But these people were sincere, and after all, the saucer phenomena constitute a terrific upset to orthodox knowledge. We also ran into our share of downright fanatics, about the same as we had back home. After one particularly trying session with an outstanding example, I sank back exhausted into an easy chair and asked Helen why it was that we always seemed to meet more than our share of screwballs. "There's an unseen law," she replied without hesitating, "which states that like attracts like, and you know the saying, it takes one to know one. As time goes on, I may inadvertently lead with my chin on other issues, but never again on that one. Experience is a great teacher." We wire President Eisenhower from Mexico City. On December 16, 1954, we were reading the newspapers of Mexico, D.F. They contained dispatches of a White House press conference held the day before, in which a reporter asked President Eisenhower a direct question regarding flying saucers. The reply was along the following lines: "With regard to these recent reports of saucers, nothing had come to him at all, either verbally or in written form. When he went back far enough the last time he had heard this talk, a man whom he trusted from the Air Force said, it was completely inaccurate to believe that they came from any outside place or planet. The dispatches also mentioned that Secretary of Defense Wilson referred to them as being too dreamy to discuss. May we state that we doubt if any other U.S. citizens have any greater respect and admiration for these two public officials than we do. In fact, we regard our president as the greatest man who has occupied that office since Washington or Lincoln. We are grateful for his great services to the U.S.A. and to the world, and we hope we realize at least a little of the sacrifices, the responsibilities and problems of his office. So we trust that nothing we have done, or are about to say, will be considered in any way as a criticism of so great a soul. But we do claim the privilege as free citizens of a free country to state our loathing for our Defense Department's policy on the flying saucer phenomena. We think it is wrong, we think it is hurting the U.S.A., that it is an unworthy policy, and that it is hurting us in the eyes of the whole world. Also, we have always felt that a matter of such cosmic import should never be relegated to our Defense Department alone. These dispatches confirmed our feeling along this line, so as free citizens of a free country we marched as a quasi-citizen protest committee to the Mexican Telegraph Office and spent 52 pesos and 55 centavos on the following telegram to President Eisenhower, December 16, 1954. To Dwight D. Eisenhower, President of the United States, Washington, D.C. Your reference to flying saucers at news conference December 15 has astounded U.S. After months of private investigation, we are convinced that spaceships from outer space are making a detailed survey of the Earth at the present time. We believe you are being given a distorted and prejudiced picture of what may be the great EST cosmic phenomenon of this age. Other countries are beginning to recognize this and its importance. We believe their truth belongs to the people, and that it can only come forth by openly and publicly appointing a receptive and unbiased scientific commission to investigate and report. Signed, Bryant and Helen Reeve, U.S. citizens. Needless to say, we did not receive a reply. No, not even from the White House janitorial. Chapter 8. National Governments and Flying Saucers. His leads us to a discussion of national governments, and their attitudes toward the flying saucer phenomena. Of all the questions asked us, one of the most common has been, why don't the great national governments of the world openly acknowledge flying saucers and tell the people what they know about them? Certainly this is a reasonable, natural and legitimate question, and it deserves a great measure of intelligent consideration. May we say at the start that some governments and some nations are far more open in regard to flying saucers than others. Canada, England, and some countries south of the border are among those more openly interested in the subject. As stated before, the Brazilian Air Force held a convention on flying saucers in 1954. Outside of the dictatorships, the greatest official secrecy seems to us to exist in the United States of America, which oddly enough is supposed to be the most democratic nation on earth. What is back of official secrecy in national governments? We diligently made a collection of reasons during our pilgrimage gathered from many sources, including talks with sorcerers, professional men, educators, military men, government officials, diplomats and just ordinary people. Incidentally, whenever we found a well-informed individual or group, all of them without exception were convinced that the governments know far more than they are giving out, far more, in fact, than most individuals know about the subject. This seemed possible to us because a government ordinarily has more sources of information than an individual. Part of our collection of reasons is as follows. 48. Collection of reasons why governments are secretive about flying saucers. 1. They, the governments, are afraid. 2. Flying saucers and their implications are a threat to the unrestrained sovereignty of any government on Earth. 3. The saucers represent a superpower in our skies, a ceiling on Earthman's free will, and his sadistic and destructive tendencies. Other worlds and other beings of vastly greater intelligence are now watching our every move. What government dares to tell this to its people? 4. If a government, by suppressing the truth, can make its enemies think that saucers are their own secret missiles, it might be able to gain a point of military advantage. 5. If a government by suppressing the truth can gain time to duplicate flying saucers before its enemies can, it could rule the world. It might even be able to carry war into our solar system and conquer and enslave some of the inhabitants of outer space. 6. The governments are afraid to tell the people because the people, the masses, are uneducated and ignorant and would probably panic. They recall the near panic in the U.S.A., which occurred when actor Orson Welles put on his famous radio broadcast of a fictitious invasion from Mars on the night of October 30, 1938. 7. The observed behavior of saucers and space beings indicates that they represent more than a physical or human phenomenon. They have a physical aspect and a supraphysical aspect. To admit this officially is simply impossible at this time. 8. The people have to be conditioned for the truth about sources because the truth is so transcendental.